The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, 14th Chapter, text number 21, given by His Divine Grace, Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj Gurudev, recorded on March 4th, 1983, at Sri Sri Radhakala Janji Dham in Dallas, Texas.
Navayam prabhavastam tvam anukartam griheshvari api ayusiva kartsnena ye chanye guna gridnavaha na never vayam we, prabhavaha, are able, tam, what that, tvam, unto you, anukartam, do the same, griha ishvari, O queen of the home, api, in spite of, ayusa, by duration of life, va, or in the next life. Katsyena, entire. Ye, who? Cha, also. Anhe, others. Guna gridnavaha, those are, who are able to appreciate qualities. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O Queen of the Home, we are not able to act like you, nor could we repay you for what you have done, even if we worked for our entire life or even after death. To repay you is not possible, even for those who are admirers of personal qualities. Purport. So much glorification of a woman by her husband indicates that he is henpecked or is talking lightly in joke. Kasyapa meant that householders living with wives enjoy the heavenly blessings of sense enjoyment and at the same time have no fear of going down to hell. The man in the renounced order of life has no wife and may be driven by sex desire to seek another woman or another's wife and thus go to hell. In other words, the so-called man of the renounced order who has left his house and wife goes to hell if he again desires sexual pleasure, knowingly or unknowingly. In that way, the householders are on the side of safety. Therefore, husbands as a class cannot repay their debt to women, either in this life or in the next. Even if they engage themselves in repaying the women throughout their whole lives, it is still not possible. Not all husbands are able to appreciate the good qualities of their wives. But even though one is able to appreciate these qualities, it is still not possible to repay the debt to the wife. Such extraordinary praises by a husband for his wife are certainly in the mode of joking. I'll read a few more verses. Atapi kamamitam de pratyajyai karavanialam yatamam natirochanti muhurtam pratipalaya. Translation. Even though it is not possible to repay you, I shall satisfy your sex desire immediately for the sake of begetting children. But you must wait for only a few seconds so that others may not reproach me. Purport. The henpecked husband may not be able to repay his wife for all the benefits that he derives from her. But as for begetting children by fulfilling sexual desire, it is not at all difficult for any husband unless he is thoroughly impotent. This is a very easy task for a husband under normal conditions. In spite of Kasyapa's being very eager, he requested her to wait for a few seconds so that others might not reproach him. He explains his position as follows. Esha gauratama vela gauranam gauradarshanaha charanti asyam bhutani bhuteshanu charantiha. Translation. This particular time is most inauspicious because at this time the horrible-looking ghosts and constant companions of the Lord of the Ghosts are visible. Purport. Kasyapa has already told his wife, Diti, to wait for a while, and now he warns her that failure to consider the particular time will result in punishment from the ghosts and evil spirits who move during this time along with their master, Lord Rudra. Etasyam sadvi sandhyayam bhagavan bhuta bhavanaha parito bhuta parashbir vrishenati bhutaratat. Translation. Lord Shiva, the king of the ghosts, sitting on the back of his bull carrier, travels at this time, accompanied by ghosts who follow him for their welfare. Purport. Lord Shiva, or Rudra, is the king of the ghosts. Ghostly characters worship Lord Shiva to be gradually guided towards the path of self-realization. Mayavadi philosophers are mostly worshippers of Lord Shiva, and Sripad Sankaracharya is considered to be the incarnation of Lord Shiva for preaching godlessness to the Mayavadi philosophers. Ghosts are bereft of a physical body because of their grievously sinful acts, such as suicide. The last resort of the ghostly characters in human society is to take shelter of suicide, either material or spiritual. Material suicide causes loss of the physical body, and spiritual suicide causes loss of the individual identity. Mayavadi philosophers desire to lose their individuality and merge into the impersonal spiritual Brahmajyoti existence. Lord Shiva, being very kind to the ghosts, sees that although they are condemned, they get physical bodies. He places the ghosts into the wombs of women who indulge in sexual intercourse regardless of the restrictions on time and circumstance. Kasyapa wanted to impress this fact upon Diti so that she might wait for a while. Ma Om Vishnu Vinaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Sunnavadi Paskata Deshatarne. So how important is this message of Srimad Bhagavatam? Because the whole world is suffering on account of the pangs of material existence. And the cause of this suffering is their ignorance. People are ignorant of the purpose of human life. They are ignorant of the path of self-realization. And so, on account of this ignorance, they do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Therefore, they are sworn to unclean acts. So one of these unclean acts is to have illicit sex. And we can now see throughout the world the results of such unclean activity, because venereal diseases are now becoming a rampant problem throughout the world. So as it is mentioned here, what is normally very easy for a man to do, that is to give his wife a child, has now become a very difficult matter. It is difficult because more and more men are impotent on account of so much unnecessary illicit sex life. They have no more potency. The men are impotent, the women are barren, and so the result is no children. They cannot produce any children. And furthermore, the economic situation of the world is becoming so difficult now then a man can hardly support his own family. It is very difficult to support a wife and even one child, what to speak of more than a child. But we can see, for example, that times are getting worse. Although this is known as the 20th century, the age of great progress, the fact of the matter remains that 100 years ago it was quite ordinary for the American people, pioneers, etc., to have 3, 4, 5, 6 children. That was a very ordinary matter, to have 5 or 6 children. And no one was starving. But nowadays, if someone has 5 or 6 children, they have to apply for welfare, because who can support them? Even if one has 1 or 2 children, one thinks to apply for welfare. But this type of business of going for welfare, that is not approved by the acharyas. Srila Prabhupada did not want the devotees of this Krishna consciousness movement to make application for social welfare, economic help, because that means that there is a breakdown in the ability of a man to work. The whole creation is meant for performing jagya. Krishna says in the 3rd chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, "In the beginning, I sent forth men and demigods and told them to be happy with this jagya." So, jagya means yajnartha karmano yatra lokoyam karma bandana tadartham karma kunteya mukta sangha samachara. Jagya or sacrifice means that one should work very hard to produce some economic necessities, particularly the Vaishyas or the mercantile class of men are meant to earn money, especially the Grihasthas. They are meant for earning money. And by working very hard based upon agriculture and cow protection, krishi gorakshyamani jam vaishyakarma sabhava jam. This is the basis of the economy. Agriculture and cow protection. So because now there is so much stress on living within the cities and producing nuts and bolts, which no one can eat, the whole basis of real economy has broken down. This is the problem. Of course, in this country still, there is a great agricultural glut. In other words, the government has to pay farmers not to grow their crops, or the government has to buy the farmers' produce and dump it in the oceans to keep the price stabilized. So this country is pious. The American country is pious. Prabhupada said, it's pious, the land is good, the people are beautiful, they are wealthy, they are intelligent. So this is a good place for performing jagya. But jagya has to engage so many people. This is another demoniac creation of the materialists, these unnecessary machines. So many machines are produced and people become unemployed. Now there's massive unemployment. And when a man is unemployed, then he gets into all kinds of mischief, because an idle mind is a devil's workshop. So sticking all of the sudras and vaishyas into the university, handing them a degree and telling them that now you're an educated person, has resulted in massive unemployment, where no one will take up any honest labor anymore, because they say, I have a degree. Now I'm an engineer, I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer. So there's no question of me doing anything else. But unfortunately, there's not enough work on these levels. So people sit down unemployed and draw salaries from the social welfare department. Therefore, Prabhupada said this is abominable to accept such welfare. Rather, man is meant to become purified by his work. Yajnartha kamano yatra loko yam karma bandana. If you don't work hard, then you become tied in karma bandana. In other words, you perform activities anyway, but those activities are karmic. They give reactions. So work has to be done as a sacrifice of Vishnu. Yajna by Vishnu. In other words, work has to be offered. The result of the work has to be offered to Vishnu. If one doesn't do this, then he has to accept the results of that work. That is called karma. Now we are all suffering on account of our karma. We're tied up by so many sinful reactions. Where, because when you work, there is a requirement of taking service from others. And very often there is the chance of hurting others in one way or another. So how to become freed from this karmic reaction? You have to offer the result to Vishnu or Krishna. Then there's no more karmic reaction. So men and demigods are meant for the performance of sacrifice. When sacrifice is nicely performed, automatically Krishna says, I send forth the rain, and from the rain you can produce grains, and from the grains you can nourish yourself and perform sacrifice. And thus you can please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, this is the system which actually is meant for the human beings. But unfortunately, people are ignorant of this. They don't know that human life is meant for sacrifice. They think that human life is meant simply for supporting themselves and their families, just like an animal. An animal also thinks like this. Haven't you seen the little birds flying about looking for a worm or some twig to make a nest? We've seen this. Haven't you seen the mother cat feeding her offspring? In other words, all animals are already engaged in such activity. Human life is a life of self-realization. So this means that there's a great responsibility to be born as a human being. And if one does not fulfill it, then there's the chance of becoming degraded. So, as it is pointed out here, it is natural for a man and a woman to become attached. Sex desire is there in the conditioned stage of life. So therefore, the Lord has arranged for the institution of Grihastha Ashram, married life, in which the husband and wife cooperate together for spiritual advancement. So here, Kasyapa Muni, being a henpecked husband, he is giving a great deal of praise to his wife. My dear wife, O queen of the home, Griheshvari, yes, queen of the home. So that means he's king of the home. This is another defect. Every man thinks he's the king of his home, and he sets himself up with his royal throne, you know, and all of the various members of the court, his children, and his queen, and in this way he enjoys. But actually, the real king of the home is meant to be Lord Krishna. In other words, as soon as you speak of ashram, you have to speak of Krishna, because ashram means spiritual residence, and spirit means God, the Supreme Spirit. So every grihastha has to always remember that he's not the king of his home, rather that Krishna is the king of the home. That means that when you live within your home, you're supposed to be living as servants. This is a big error to think that, Krishna can be the king of his home, but I have my home and I'm going to be the king of that home. No, that is not right. Our homes are not for our kingships. It's not that we have little, kingly estates surrounding Krishna's estate. Actually, our homes are the servants' quarters. Just like in India, you see wealthy men, they always have a building in the back which is meant for the servants. So the servants should be thinking that these quarters are, they have to think, they're very humble quarters, simply meant as a place for the servants to reside so that they can finish off the business, eating, sleeping, cleaning themselves, etc. And real business is to serve the master. So similarly, our homes should be like that. In other words, they should be residences where the servants of the deity are residing. Just like if you go to India, there's a holy place, Sri Rangam. And in Sri Rangam, at the center is the deity, Lord Ranganath. And all around him, there are expanding different sections of the population, and they're all the servants of the deity. They're all servants' quarters surrounding the deity in a big square, one big square after another, increasing in size. The Brahmins are living in the beginning, then the Kshatriyas, then the Vaishyas, and the Sudras. Goes out like this. But everyone is living as a servant of the deity. The homes are simple, modest, and the deity's picture is there, the spiritual master's picture is there. Everybody keeps the house very clean, and everybody is always in the consciousness that we are the servants of the deity. So So we have to be in that consciousness. Not that when we come home, you know, we flip off our shoes, stick up our feet, and, you know, flick on the TV and start to enjoy. This is what the karmis do. Because they think that they are the kings of their home. They think that now I've worked hard, now let me enjoy. But a devotee, he enjoys his work because he's working for Krishna. Bhakti gives bliss, just like you see the gopis. They serve Krishna so completely that what did Krishna say? My dear gopis, your service is so good that there's no way I can repay you. Therefore, the only satisfaction I can give you is that through your service, you will find complete happiness. So the repayment for devotional service doesn't come afterwards that we suddenly can relax and enjoy. Devotional service, when one engages it in the proper mood, it is blissful. Just like we see here in the evening, so many guests are coming and the preachers are preaching. And that preaching is part of devotional service, very ecstatic. The waitresses are running around serving prasadam, and they're feeling happy from that service. The cooks are there flipping the, what are those things? Crepes. And they are feeling happy. The shopkeeper is in the gift shop selling Krishna's paraphernalia, and she is happy. The temple sweeper is shining the floors, and he is happy. In other words, everyone is happy by their service, because that's the nature of devotional service. Material engagement doesn't do this. Material engagement, you simply work hard, and you have to try to wait for the result afterwards, because the work is misery. It's misery. That's why the karmis, they don't work for free. They have to get a salary, because the work is so much miserable, there's no pleasure in it. But devotees are not like that. They don't have to get a salary, because the work itself is their satisfaction. Therefore, Krishna advises that you become my devotee. All that you do, all that you offer, all that you give away, everything should be made as an offering unto me. Why? Because Krishna is trying to teach us this is the only way to become happy. There's no possibility of happiness in the material world. It is miserable from beginning to end. It is simply a trick of Maya to make you think if you work hard, you'll get some result, and then you'll be able to enjoy that result. There's only one type of joy, and that is loving service to Krishna. When one engages in loving service to Krishna, he feels himself happy. And we see it practically. Just like our men, they're constructing at the farm. Some of you visit the farm, you see they're working so hard from 8 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock at night they work. But they're in ecstasy. They're racing out there to get out there, racing to finish. And why are they racing to finish their building? So they can race to the next city to build another building. And there's no salary. There's hardly any days off. That means there must be some pleasure within that service. Krishna must be giving reciprocation from within the heart. And this is actually a fact. When one serves Krishna, whatever that service may be, he gets reciprocation within the heart. So how to serve Krishna? You have to offer the results to Krishna. And that is the meaning. Not that we say, I'm serving Krishna, but then you keep all of the results for yourself. That is not service to Krishna. Service to Krishna actually means where Krishna says, whatever you do, whatever you offer, whatever you give away in sacrifice, must be made as a sacrifice unto me. So, the husband and wife keeping the home as a servant's quarters for the deity, that keeps them in a very humble mood. Now, this humble mood is necessary for advancement in devotional life. Just like we have tried to make our residential building at our new Kurukshetra in a humble way. We didn't supply the private bathrooms. So the grihasthas may think, oh, this is incomplete. How will I... You don't need a private bathroom so long as you're a servant. But if you think that you're the king and the queen, then this privacy is necessary. The privacy facilitates sense gratification. That's the nature of privacy. The more just like you can see, when you're standing in the temple room chanting your japa in the morning, very hard to fall into sense gratification. But you go to your home and start chanting and watch what happens to your mind. So many thoughts start to come. As soon as you become alone, just like one time one of our early devotees, he told Prabhupada, I was on a japa walk and I saw the sunrise and it was so beautiful. And Prabhupada said, yes, you were in Maya. He said, it's better that you stay with the devotees and chant. Because as we go off on our own, we start to get into this enjoying tendency, enjoying nature, enjoying the body, enjoying the mind, subtle, gross, so many types of enjoyment. But when we congregate together as devotees, the reminder is always there, I'm a servant of Krishna. So we built this building like that. We could have built separate buildings, but we wanted to minimize the privacy. Not totally, but sufficiently so that everyone would remember Krishna. So the quarters there, they're nice, they're sufficient, but they don't facilitate very well sense gratification. That was the plan of building the building like that. And it is based upon experience. The experience, just like I was speaking with Srila Bhaktipada, who is in New Vrindavan. So he was saying how those who are advancing nicely in spiritual life, they like to live in close proximity to each other and to the deities. But the more one becomes weak in spiritual life, the more the tendency is there to move away or to move away from the devotees, to live on one's own, to have privacy more and more. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that association is the principal factor in advancement in spiritual life. Just like Srila Prabhupada, for us, he is the example of spiritual life. And he always lived in close proximity with the devotees. You may say, well, when he was a grihastha, he didn't. But his grihastha ashram was not a success because his wife was in Maya. It didn't work. And neither you can say, well, his wife may have been in Maya, but Prabhupada wasn't. But neither are you Prabhupada. Prabhupada wrote a letter when we were in London that some of the devotees, they wanted to live at George Harrison's house. They were living there. So Prabhupada wrote me to Paris. He wrote me a letter. That now I have received a letter from London from one of the couples who was living with George, and they're complaining of spiritual weakness. He said, this is not good. He said, as far as possible, devotees should always live with each other. They should not live on their own so much. So we are trying to design these communities for spiritual advancement, not for material sense gratification. Just like our Krishna consciousness community here, it is designed for that purpose. Spiritual advancement. That is what its purpose is. If someone likes to become advanced in spiritual life, they'll feel enthused by this community spirit. But if someone wants sense gratification, then they feel that their privacy is being infringed upon, or their independence is being infringed upon. So, now the result of independence is described here, that as far as sex life goes, there's no independence. That a husband and wife are only allowed to have sex life on the instruction of the spiritual master. And at that point, the sex life has to be done in a regulated way, just like in our Krishna consciousness movement. For the husbands and wives to conceive a child, they must chant 50 rounds. And then they have to do so at the right time. Otherwise, as you can see here, Lord Shiva and his ghostly followers are lurking around at certain hours of the day. And if one engages in sex life at the wrong time, then Lord Shiva, who is described, he has three eyes. He has three eyes because with his two eyes he sees everything, and with his third eye he sees what others don't see. Nothing escapes the vision of Lord Shiva. So when Lord Shiva sees someone having illicit sex at the wrong time, he thinks, here is a fit candidate to allow one of my ghostly followers to get a material body with, a gross body. So immediately he calls for one of the ghosts, and these ghosts are put into the womb of a woman who is having illicit sex with a man. Whether he's the husband or not makes no difference. Illicit sex doesn't just mean with someone else's husband or someone else's wife. Illicit sex means without the permission of the spiritual master, without following the regulative principles. And then the result is that one gives birth to an embodied ghost known as Varnasankara. And the whole world is full now of these Varnasankaras. They're actually ghostly personalities who were the followers of Lord Shiva, who have now gotten a gross body on account of all kinds of illicit sex life. Therefore, everybody in the world is feeling harassed. That's why when you go down the street in a dhoti or sari with tilak on chanting Hare Krishna, all the ghosts start spitting and shouting foul things. Because they're ghosts with bodies. You see? So, we have to do something about this. The first thing we have to do is to become Krishna conscious, so at least in our own group, we don't give birth to any ghosts. Because it's bad enough to have ghosts outside. It becomes very difficult when the ghosts are also inside. You see? So, first business is, no one should conceive any ghosts. Everybody should be very careful that if they're going to get married and they're going to have children, they should have sadhus, little saints, you know, who are so nice that they can deliver everybody in the world. The world needs saintly children. And that will be ensured if one always keeps himself fixed properly. Here, Kasyapa's appreciation for his wife is too much. It is too much. He's becoming enamored by her physical beauty and all of the service she's rendering. A man should understand that when a wife is serving him, that she's doing so to facilitate his service to Krishna and his spiritual master. No one should think that the wife is simply meant for my sense gratification, to make my home nice for me to enjoy. One should think that my wife is facilitating my service, just like a sannyasi thinks that the brahmacharis are assisting him to facilitate service to Krishna. The spiritual master thinks that the disciples are not meant for his sense gratification. The spiritual master never thinks in terms of the disciples that this disciple is meant for my sense gratification. Rather, the spiritual master thinks that I must help the disciple to advance in his or her service to Krishna, and so we shall cooperate together. So the disciple may give some assistance or service to the spiritual master, but the purpose is to increase the service of Krishna. So similarly, when the wife is serving the husband, making the home nice, cooking a nice dinner, offering the foodstuffs, looking after the children, this is not so that the husband can come home and enjoy. This is so that the whole house becomes a spiritual abode, so that the husband becomes inspired. Yes, let us all serve Krishna together. And similarly, when the husband takes nice care of the wife, whether through support or other methods, it is not so that the wife can think, now I shall take advantage and utilize all the service of my husband for my enjoyment. No, the husband is taking nice care of the wife so that she may be relieved of anxiety so she can also engage in Krishna's service. This is the purpose of Vedic marriage. Vedic marriage is meant for cooperation, that the husband and wife can cooperate, just like Prabhupada wrote a letter like that, that now you were thinking that by taking a wife, your service would be increased. So Krishna has given you a nice wife. Now cooperate together and open as many centers throughout the world as possible. But this was what Prabhupada had in mind for the grihasthas of our movement. He had in mind that they would dedicate themselves heart and soul to the preaching mission of Lord Chaitanya. He did not have it so much in mind that they would become deeply entangled in material affairs. So sometimes if we see someone who's very, very strong, then we may allow them to mix up in the material world, but they will not become affected. But sometimes if someone is very weak, we may also recommend that you may mix up in the material affairs, because otherwise they don't get satisfied in pure spiritual activity. So the whole thing has to be adjusted by the self-realized personality, someone who can actually see clearly how the modes of material nature are affecting the conditioned souls. That someone can recommend to the grihastha that this is the proper arrangement for you. In other words, the spiritual master's involvement is required. Prabhupada not only established the principle of spiritual master and disciple, he established the principle of spiritual guidance in the form of temple presidents, GBC members, and he trained these persons very, very much so that they could then give guidance and advice to all of the devotees how to practically live their life out. Just like we're sitting in our room and every evening people come. And they come to us for spiritual advice. And the main point is not just what does this philosophy mean, but how can I purify my life? That's what they want to know. How can I set up my life in a proper way? So this is practical. One has to approach the spiritual master for such guidance. And one has to have faith in the spiritual master's words. Not that I am approaching you as a soul surrendered unto me, unto you. Please guide me. And then the spiritual master says, yes, do this, do that. And you say, oh, well, if that's the kind of guidance, then I'm very sorry, but I will have to withdraw from this arrangement. That's not proper. The person who comes for spiritual instruction should be ready to receive that instruction with full faith and surrender, and to carry out these orders. One who is ignorant One who is in ignorance, he requires guidance. And that guidance he has to have faith in, and he has to try and fulfill it. Then actually he can come out of his suffering condition. So our whole advancement in spiritual life depends upon this. Firm faith and conviction in the words of Krishna and Krishna's representatives. We must always realize that we are not independent. There is always someone above us as an authority. There's always someone. There's always a spiritual master. And by Krishna and Prabhupada's mercy within our movement, there's always some authority. Even as I say again and again, even I sitting here as a spiritual master for so many disciples, still I have my authority, the GBC body. And I accept their authority as absolute. Whatever they say, I take it as representing Srila Prabhupada. And similarly, the temple president, he takes whatever the GBC says as representing Srila Prabhupada. And the devotee should take whatever the temple president says as representing Prabhupada and Krishna. This is disciplic succession. And if anyone is unqualified, then Krishna will replace them. It is only a question of time. No one stands in these positions. Prabhupada said that Krishna is within this movement, and he's always watching over this movement. So if someone is unqualified, then sooner or later their time runs out. And they become, by their disqualification, they get removed. That happens. Because this movement is meant to be pure. It is meant as it's actually meant as the extension of Krishna's preaching energy. It's the internal potency. Krishna describes this, that the internal potency takes the form of the preaching mission. So this preaching mission is the internal potency. Therefore, there cannot be any contamination within it. And as soon as some contamination enters, it is the duty. Prabhupada says the GBC are meant to be the watchdogs of ISKCON. And as soon as some intrusion comes from Maya, they're meant to bark and move that intrusion out. One time in the last year, I said to Srila Prabhupada that it seems like this movement is so strict that it's very difficult for a lot of people to join. And Prabhupada said, we are not interested necessarily for a lot of people to join, but we want that there should be an example that the whole world can see, that at least here is purity. Even if the whole world cannot join, let them at least have a perfect example. So our business is to keep this movement very pure. At the same time, we should extend our mercy as far as possible. Just like I'm trying like that to engage so many people here. There are many people here, I know it very well, that they cannot follow everything perfectly. But I'm simply seeing if they have a service attitude and if they're humble. When they're puffed up, they get kicked out. Puffed up people cannot be tolerated. This is the most intolerable quality that anyone can have, is when they get puffed up and they get kicked out by Krishna. But if someone is humble, even he's fallen, he can be accepted in the Lord's service. And there are many, many examples throughout Shastra like this. So humility is very important. If someone says, my dear sir, I am trying my best, but I am very fallen. You please keep me engaged, and one day I shall come to the standard. But that is acceptable. But if someone is very much proud, that person cannot be helped. Pride cometh before the fall. When one is too much proud, then he cannot take any good instruction, he cannot take any good counsel, and he constantly finds fault. This is the nature of a proud person. A proud person will, instead of seeing his own fault and shortcomings, he will constantly see the shortcomings and faults of others, although he himself is full of faults. Therefore, I say that if someone may have many faults, but if he's humble, he'll admit that. He'll know, I'm fallen. I need the help of the devotees. I need the help of Krishna. I need the help of Guru. But a proud person will think, no, I am all right. I don't require anybody's help. Rather, they are all fallen. They need my help. So such a person, that person cannot be tolerated within a spiritual organization. It's better that he lives on his own and lives with his own pride and good qualities. So, the spiritual master, the husband, the father, these are the natural authorities. And every one of them must be fit. Sometimes we see within this movement that there are unfortunate circumstances where devotees have difficulty. But always we should trace out that the difficulty is that you give up the instructions of your spiritual master. This is the cause of spiritual fall down, and there is no other cause. People make so many claims that I fell down because I was harassed to go out on Sankirtan too much. I fell down because the management was just too pushy. I fell down because, but no one said, I fell down because I was weak. This is the actual reason to fall down. That you give up the instructions of your spiritual master. What is the basic instruction? That you chant 16 rounds without committing offenses. That's 16 rounds without committing offenses. That means you have to do everything possible to stop committing offenses. That means just like being inattentive while chanting. That is an offense. Therefore, I say, please chant your japa in the temple room. Because I know that in the temple room, it's very hard to be inattentive. But as soon as you go to your homes, it becomes very easy. And there's so many other things which are offenses against the holy name. If you don't chant the holy name offenselessly, how will you clear out your heart of material desires? So it's very important to come to the proper state of qualitative chanting. Therefore, you have to do all the activities. Prabhupada said, you have to come to Mangalarti. You have to chant with the devotees, your japa. Then you should have Guru Puja and worship the spiritual master. Then you should greet the deity. Then hear the Bhagavatam class. These things will give you offenseless chanting. Otherwise, you're going to be on the stage of offensive chanting. And offensive chanting is useless. I mean, it's nearly useless. It means it has use, but useless in the sense that it will not clear the heart of material desires. In that sense, it's useless. It is useful because gradually it will lead you to a higher stage, hopefully, if the offense don't become too severe. But it does not clear the heart. So this is the cause of fall down. Now, anyone who is a father, anyone who is a husband, anyone who is a guru, anyone who is in any position as a preacher, also as a preacher, that person, he cannot execute his responsibilities if he's fallen, and he had no business being in that position. If a guru is fallen, the disciples should not follow. If a husband is fallen, the wife should not follow. If a teacher is fallen, the student should not follow. If a preacher is fallen, the person who's hearing should not follow. These are the injunctions of Scripture. It's clearly stated. There are many, many examples. Bali Maharaj disregarded his guru because his guru was fallen. There are many, many examples of a father. When Daksha Maharaj gave so many material descriptions, his sons didn't listen to him. They followed Narad Muni. There are many examples of disregard of guru, disregard of father, disregard of husband. There's so many disregardings. Not that I'm making this up. This is stated in Shastra. Why? Because human life is meant for self-realization. So there's check and balance. Everyone has to be checked. Everyone has to be balanced. And this way we become strong. And if you don't want this serious approach to Krishna consciousness, then you're not fit to go back to Godhead. That means you still want to enjoy in the material world. So these lectures, they have to be meant for those who are serious to go back to Godhead. This is not the time to give watered-down lectures. We can give the sweetened lectures at the time of the public gatherings. But at the time when the devotees are gathered together early in the morning, they're wanting to hear how to go back to Godhead. And it is our duty, the duty of the Bhagavatam speaker, to speak the truth. And the truth is strengthening and palatable to those who want to follow it. And it's unpalatable to those who do not, who can't follow it. So therefore I said, if this distinction should be made, everybody should know who is Krishna conscious and who is not Krishna conscious, so you know how to follow. Otherwise, if you follow the wrong person, then that person goes down and you go down with them. So we're fighting a battle, and it's the duty of the commander to strengthen the ranks constantly, to encourage them, strengthen them, guide them, not to allow frivolity. Frivolousness is useless in a war. You'll lose the war if all of your soldiers are fooling around. So we're trying to fight a war. I'm trying to make devotees here, and I need everybody's cooperation. I can't handle it when people are fooling around in their homes or wherever they're fooling around. It's very serious business. People are coming now. We're starting to get more and more people coming to this community, looking, is this place legitimate? Is it bona fide? Or is it another fake like everything else that I've been cheated with? And if they you know, automatically they're going to mix with all the devotees in this community. And if they start finding out devotees that are not spiritually fit, they're going to fall down with those devotees. They're going to become allured, attracted, and the whole thing becomes disrupted. Whatever work we're doing on Sankirtan, whatever preaching we're doing here, will be counteracted if any of us are not serious. Therefore, we have to, you know, all agree. Let us cooperate. If you don't want to be in this mood, then move out. Simple, clear. This is a serious matter. It's a serious matter. We're trying to save the conditioned souls who've been here too long. So everybody should become now fixed up. It's not difficult. The only way you have to do it, you just go through the home morning program. If you can go through the program from 4:30 in the morning till about 9 in the morning or 8:30 in the morning, there's no problem. You'll never fall down. You will not fall down. And you'll have all good intelligence, all strength to execute Krishna consciousness. Are there any questions? It's very hard to engage such a person. Sometimes people see that devotees have mistakes and faults. So they say, I can't live in close association with the devotees because there's so many mistakes and faults and shortcomings they have. But do you mean to say that you don't have those mistakes and faults and shortcomings? Or do you mean to say that the people in the material world don't have them? No, there's one quality here that distinguishes the devotee from a non-devotee. That he has all the mistakes and faults of the non-devotees, but he has one good qualification. He's tolerant and forgiving. So in other words, the key to living in association with devotees is that you have to be tolerant and forgiving. Because Prabhupada said, this is a hospital. It's not that everyone here is a great saint with wings. There's a lot of sinners here, too. You see? So we have to accept the fact that there's still sinful reactions that some of the devotees are suffering from. And that causes them to speak in a certain way or act in a certain way, which isn't completely Krishna conscious. But the point is that they're trying to go back to Godhead. They know what the path is. They're trying. So you have to tolerate and forgive and not lose, you know, your tolerance and say, I quit. I'd rather live on my own. Because then you live on your own. You live with your own sins. If you can tolerate your own nonsense, why can't you tolerate someone else's? It's not that Prabhupada, for example, didn't see how fallen in nonsense we were. But he lived amongst us. Otherwise, how could he deliver us? So we have to live amongst the devotees and tolerate the inconvenience. Prabhupada gave a lecture once on this. Very nice lecture. And he said, you have to live amongst the devotees, but tolerate the inconvenience. He said, I know that sometimes it is inconvenient, but tolerate it because it's for your good. So, these conditions are a little bit, I'm not off the subject, I'm on the subject, that the conditions are these impurities. Because a pure devotional service is described as ahoitaki apratihata. It is causeless and unconditional, undeterred. Pure devotional service has no condition. I mean, I can honestly say that when we were in India assisting Prabhupada, I'll write this, if Krishna helps me, in part 3 of this Servant of the Servant, how Prabhupada demanded unconditional service. I mean, I was in the Grihastha Ashram at that time, and we were staying in Calcutta with Prabhupada, and they gave us a room. If you ever go to the Calcutta temple, you go upstairs into the attic. That room couldn't be more than about maybe 15 by 15. And 4 Grihastha couples lived in that room together. The only wall was 2 strings which crisscrossed with blankets hanging over. And we weren't hippies. Prabhupada made that arrangement. Because that's all there was. So that was the condition. You're my disciple. I brought you here to help me preach the glories of Lord Chaitanya to the people of India. Now tolerate this difficulty, please. On behalf of Krishna, you will be blessed for it and assist me. Don't complain. And we had to serve like that under very, very difficult circumstances. And so many times Prabhupada would push us like that. So many diseases we got there, Prabhupada kept pushing us. So devotional service in its pure form is unconditional. There's no conditions placed on it. When a spiritual master asks a disciple to do something, the disciple should immediately accept it as the spiritual master asks me to do this for my own welfare. The spiritual master doesn't do anything to hurt the disciple. Why would he do that? What would be the benefit or gain? He's trying to help the disciple to go back to God, and why would he make his own work harder? So the spiritual master or the GBC or the temple president, the representative, in one way or another, why should he be doing something which is harmful? Why should he be asking? No. If he asks something which seems difficult, it's because of my conditioned nature. Now let me try to overcome my conditioning and surrender and take up the service without complaint. That should be our attitude. If you have some points, you can put them forward and then let the authority consider them and then give you his final statement and accept it willingly. Should be like that. Does that answer your question? Or you can ask another question to clarify it further. But everything is service to the deity, and we should extend what you're saying to all departments, whether Sankirtan, cooking, any work whatsoever. Yeah, there shouldn't be conditions. Certainly, there's benefit. Any service done to Krishna is beneficial. But the more you get into a pure mood of service, the more beneficial it is. Another question? Yes, therefore there's the GBC representative. So such a devotee should immediately report the matter to the GBC representative. Yeah? And then the GBC representative will act, either immediately or after some time. And if the GBC representative doesn't act, then Krishna will act. Because Krishna is the top GBC. Krishna is the final GBC. You have to realize that nothing is going to happen without Krishna's sanction to this movement. If the devotee can keep living, yes. But if it's a matter of that if I keep following like this, my entire faith is going to become shattered, then that devotee may have to do something. Generally, we try to always follow authority. But there has to be some line. If someone tells you to obviously break Shastric injunction, how can you follow it? Even that person may be in the highest position, just like Bali Maharaj. Vamandev came and said, now, you offer me. I'm coming as a Brahmin. And Bali Maharaj said, I always give whatever the Brahmins ask. He said, give me 3 feet of land. And immediately his guru jumped in between and said, don't do it. Don't do it. This is a trick. This person is not a small dwarf. This is God himself. He's going to take everything. And Bali Maharaj looked at him and said, you know, what are you talking about? I want to serve him. I've given my word. I will serve him. You cannot teach me irreligion. Even if you're my guru, I cannot follow you. And because he surrendered unto Vamadeva and agreed to follow whatever Vamadeva asked, he's glorified. He's glorified. He's one of the 12 Mahajanas. He shows the path of religion. So there's an example of disregarding authority. So there is allowance for such an event. Let us pray that it doesn't become necessary to do that. But then let us also pray that if it does, one has the strength to do it. Hopefully, everybody should be so conscientious and watchful. The GBC body should be watching the GBC representatives. The GBC representatives should be watching the temple presidents. The temple presidents should be watching the devotees so that no infraction in the rules is created. And if one says, I don't like so much watching, but I say that as a parent, you watch your children that much. You enforce that upon children. Because you know that if you don't, they'll get into mischief. So is that not the right mentality for the authority, to be very watchful? That's an unfair criticism if someone says, stop controlling your child so much, let them do nonsense. That's not fair. We don't tell the Gurukul teachers and the ashram teachers, let the children do nonsense. No, it's the duty to correct so that they grow up nice. So similarly, it's the duty of all of the authorities within this movement to correct. Another question? We're all unqualified. So we all get a chance. And after we fail, we get another chance. And after we fail, we get another chance. And after we fail, we get another chance. But sooner or later, the chances run out. Then you fall. And after you fall down, you crawl back and you beg, please give me another chance. And then you get another chance. And then if you fail, you fall down even further. And then maybe you beg again. And then again you get a chance. In other words, there's no end to getting a chance, but that doesn't mean that you don't fall if you don't take advantage of the chance. There's no limit to how much Lord Chaitanya can forgive, but that doesn't mean you should take advantage of that mercy of Lord Chaitanya. No one will ever be denied a chance to come back to Krishna consciousness. That is not possible. If someone is sincere, they will always be welcome back. There's never a time when someone will be told no. If you're sincere, the devotee never ever holds grudge. There's no question of a grudge. Because we recognize that the soul is conditioned within the material existence. That's the purpose of our movement, to give forgiveness, to be forgiving, and to welcome people back to Krishna's family. But then one should want to come back. If they want to come back, then they're always given that chance. No one is ever denied a chance to come back to Krishna consciousness. And when you come back, you begin immediately from where you left off. Nothing is lost. In devotional service, there is no loss and there is no diminution. So even you have fallen away, as soon as you come back, you begin from where you left off. Another question? When everybody is lined up, then I'll speak sweetly. Just like I told these four Sankirtan mothers, as soon as they came in the room, I said, and it happens, that I have no difficulty to speak very nice subject matters with them. Isn't that a fact, Shamasundar? Because they're all very surrendered for doing service. But if I speak strongly, it's because I feel that there's need to get everybody in line. not that I'm always in this mood, but if I'm in this mood a lot, it's because you're in this mood a lot. And you need it. I reciprocate according to how someone is. If they're not properly Krishna conscious, then I have to preach strongly. And if things are very properly Krishna conscious, then I speak accordingly. Anybody have any questions or comments? Popalchan, comment? Sunanda? Burijan has a comment. The teacher. What is your comment? What advice can you give us on the subject of today's lecture? Penetrates. What is that called? The fire of ordeal? Pure, what is it? Is it saying fire of ordeal? One is purified by fire of ordeal. Fire is purifying. Guru is, the spiritual master is called Nisringa Guru because he's supposed to be like a lion. That's why the lions are here. But a lion doesn't just roar. He can also bite. So don't think that these are just words. There's a fight that's behind it also. But to the cubs, then the lion is very nice, right? The example is given that the lion grabs a jackal and rips its throat. But as soon as the little cubs of the lion are there, what are they called? Lion cubs? The lion picks the cubs up by the scruff of the neck and his teeth, and he carries them around and gives them a nice ride. So although the spiritual master may be very ferocious in regard to Maya, he's very meek and humble and loving in regard to Krishna. So the devotees may be blind to Maya, but the guru should not be blind. And if the guru is roaring, that means that Maya is there, even if you cannot see it. Just like Lord Shiva, he has a third eye to see what you and I cannot see. So we have to accept that we may be blind. Om Abhyana Timanandasya Jananjana Savakaya Chaksula Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I am blinded with the darkness of ignorance, but my spiritual master may please give me the eyes by which to see. So that means the spiritual master, he has the vision to see with the torchlight of knowledge where is the darkness. Even though we are, for us, whose eyes are shut, everything appears the same, darkness. But for one whose eyes are opened, he can distinguish the darkness from the light. So he's trying to open up the eyes of the disciples by bringing the torchlight of knowledge. And if there is some attempt by Maya to put out this torchlight, then he has to roar. Any questions? Comments? Yes. Very nice. Tell us about your, also, after you comment, you can tell us something of your travels.
I was very fortunate for me to go to Europe. I
Did you have a camera? Yes, therefore we're pushing so hard. Very cooperative mood there. They don't have a lot of mixed moods in Italy. Everybody's lined up. There's no fringe community. No, I know that they don't. They're all lined up in Krishna consciousness. When everybody gets fixed up, then you can really make great headway. That's why I'm saying I'm very determined now to push very strongly forward. Either get on the boat or swim. And if you jump overboard, make sure you got another boat to jump into or you may drown. But we got to head back to home, back to Godhead. Yeah, but it's only possible with the cooperation of everybody. As Prabhupada could not do things alone, at least he said he could not. I know I cannot. I need the help of so many devotees. But to have to be willing to cooperate. Otherwise, it's just so hard. It's very hard. Very hard when you're trying to swim one way and someone else is trying to stroke the other way. Hard to get anywhere. So that was a great experience for you. He's special. Perfect householder. Perfect. He's exemplary. Fire of ordeal. Just wait a day for the jet lag to hit. Oh, that's very nice. Yes, devotees, if they travel like this, if they travel under the order of the spiritual master and they visit other zones and temples, that's very good. But the traveling should be done in the right way. Just like in India, I was in India, you know, I never went in 4 years I was at GBC and I never went to Jagannath Puri. For 2 years I never hardly went to Vrindavan. Unless there was service, I did not travel. So we should travel with a service mood. When our service warrants it, then we can visit other temples and zones, and it's very beneficial. Oh, it's very beneficial. Just like we go every year to Mayapur, some of us. That's the proper way to go. Prabhupada wants us to go at this time as far as possible. It's a great benefit. There should be service, in other words, that takes one. Not these types of joy rides where you get a vacation. So many times I see devotees, especially household devotees, this is one of their specialties in this community, at least I've noticed. This community, Los Angeles, there's a couple of communities like this, where as soon as they think that every year I have to take a couple times, I just start driving around. I mean, I never did that. I never did it, and I'm never going to do it. I don't have that time. I don't have vacation time. If there's a vacation, then Prabhupada said our vacation is to go to Mayapur and Vrindavan for the Gaur Purnima festival. You know, it's not that, I go through a marathon, then I take a vacation. That's one of the favorites here. Everybody goes to be with their parents. And they all say it's miserable. There was no point to it. You know, and yet every year they go. You need a break. If you need a break, go to Mayapur and Vrindavan. Or talk with the spiritual master and find a nice temple you can visit for a week or something if you need a break. Or do something in Krishna's service. Or go and take some cases of books and just, you know, stay out in some town and just distribute books and do some program. Do something for Krishna. Don't just go off. This is a real peculiarity. The Gurukul also, I can't understand how they do that, you know, so-called vacation. I don't. The teachers, the children. Vacation should be a planned vacation, not unplanned. Otherwise, the children, they get accustomed to thinking, oh, there's a time when you don't have to be Krishna conscious. That's not true. One should always be Krishna conscious. Not that we don't take vacation. Like I said, going to Mayapur. And there's opportunities. There are opportunities. Just like when we have our next marathon for doing our farm payment. You see, afterwards we'll have a four-day vacation. But it'll be planned. We'll all go together to New Kurukshetra, and we will enjoy swimming in the lake, baking potatoes in the fire, having kirtans all day and evening, riding the horses, milking the cows. It'll be so nice. That kind of vacation we should take. You like that, Narayan? Huh? Narayan? Is that a nice idea? Very good sikha you have now. Now Krishna can pull you back to Godhead by your sikha. You and Janardhan, Krishna will pull you both by your sikha back to Godhead. I hope that the sikha is very strong on your head. It won't come out, will it? So that's nice that you went there and saw these temples and devotees. Yeah, the whole movement now, you can see that this is not some little cult in America. This is a worldwide movement. And when you go to India, you'll really get it reinforced when you see an entire nation, entire villages and cities and towns like Vrindavan, completely Krishna conscious. That to some degree, in any case. Everybody is somewhat Krishna conscious. Very much reinforces. That's why Prabhupada wanted us to go to Mayapur and Vrindavan to see this. I know any devotee who's gone there, they get this appreciation. It's hard, you know, especially living here in Texas. The Texans are just so, you know, rough and barbaric. They're barbarians, practically. All of the Westerners are barbarians. So, you know, sometimes you feel intimidated. But these type of journeys, they help. But Italians are the most pious people in the Western world. They are the nicest religious people. They really take nicely to Krishna consciousness. Did you go to the Rome temple? Nice place also. Nice devotees. Very nice devotees. Very good. Now you can inspire us by your inspiration. All right, Jai. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga.